Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, glad you're with us here on Jaguars Today, officially kicking off once again the question today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of automobile dealerships for Jaguars Today is, who is the all-time biggest draft steal in Jaguars history? I'll say this. I don't have a problem if you say Fred Taylor's a draft steal because the eighth overall pick, you say, hey, he played like, you know, one of the three greatest players in franchise history. He was worth more than that. That's fine. But if you say, because we traded Rob Johnson to get that pick, well, Fred was taken with the eighth pick, regardless of how you acquired the eighth pick. If you want to say Rob Johnson was a steal because you got him in the fourth round and you turned him into Fred Taylor, I'd buy that argument a little bit more. But you can vote however you like on that on Twitter at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. 1 month away, Tony. Are we fooling ourselves? Is it as simple as do we have it really narrowed down to the three guys we think the Jags will be selecting from? It feels that way.
It certainly does, and I'm tired of being in the top five where we can narrow it down to three or four names every year. By the time we get about a month out, I would love next year at this time to be going, well, let's see how the first 22 picks shake out and then see what's available to them. What's going to fall to the Jags at 24 next year in the draft? I would love to be having that conversation. Unfortunately, once again, they're in the top five. You got a team at number one that feels like they've at least started to circle in on an offensive tackle, maybe a quarterback at number two, which limits some of the options the Jags are going to have to maybe that top three names that we've honed in on.
You know, I heard the guys of XL Primetime talking about this. When was the last time the Jaguars did not pick in the top 10? Not that they didn't earn, like the Blaine Gabbert selection initially was 16, but they traded up to 10.
Yeah, they traded up to 10. They traded back in to get Harvey.
Right, and
so
he was
was it like Reggie Nelson?
It was Reggie Nelson. I mean, you think that is a long time ago, man.
And Holy cow.
When they picked, actually, their first pick actually ended up falling outside the top 10. And it's funny because you mentioned that next year maybe we'll be saying what kind of picks will be available. Reggie was a guy that was heavily discussed as a wish list guy for Jaguar fans and for the franchise, and that it ended up being him, and that was, you know, later on in the first round, and that was a guy you were able to pinpoint on a short list of players. By the way, apparently the bat signal has gone out. All right, Donna has been alerted that there is something that reeks in the studio.
She already took out the garbage.
And did she take out the big one over here?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, she's amazing.
So you said Reggie Nelson was the last one since 2007?
Last time the Jags first pick fell outside the top 10.
Yeah.
Now, they had a couple, like the Derek Harvey deal, he was in the 20s. They were in the 20s. They traded up to number 8 to get Derek Harvey. Blaine Gabbert, they traded up from 16 to 10. So they didn't pick outside the top 10 those years with their first selection. So we're not talking that this was, you know, XL Primetime discussing this, and I was trying to go through it. And yeah, Reggie Nelson turned out to be the guy. That's going back a ways.
I wasn't even in high school yet in 2007.
That's crazy,
oh,
man. I
goodness.
Mean, it's just you just go back and think about that. That's a long time ago. It seems like yesterday, but man, the last time the Jags made the playoffs, and that's going back. And Reggie had a terrific year. We talked about he's still out there on the open market right now.
Well, that was the 2007 draft,
I believe.
Right,
so
that was 2006 when they missed the playoffs. They made it in
2005. Right, but 2007 was the last year they made the playoffs.
Yeah, in 2007 they made the playoffs, and that's when they traded in to get Harvey because this felt like a team that thought they were really, really close to getting something done. And so they traded back up to go get Derek Harvey, and we saw all that worked out.
Right.
Quentin Groves in the second round. Boy, those two pass rushers
gosh, we got two pass rushers. Now we're ready to go. The missing link.
And then a couple years later, it was the Jags traded up to go get Blackman. It was like, there it is. There's the missing piece on offense. Here we go. And
they had a lot
every
more
time you feel like you're one
time
piece away, Jacksonville, it turns really sour really
no,
quick.
That's why they're trying to avoid doing that kind of approach to it, that they have limits. If you felt like the only thing keeping you back from being a championship-level team was a player like Olivier Vernon or any other guy, that's when you go a little bit cuckoo and try to bring that guy in. Doesn't always work out, but at least I think it's more justifiable. By the way, what's your opinion on Allen Hurns being a draft steal since he was undrafted?
We're talking about draft picks, so probably not.
I'm going to say he's not a draft steal if he wasn't drafted by the Jags.
Certainly was a phenomenal pickup by the team.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, but from that token, so were Jimmy Smith and a lot of other guys. They were free agents, though. You know, I understand why you would feel Allen Hurns was the greatest draft steal in history, but he didn't get drafted here. So, you know, he may be the greatest rookie free agent pickup in history by the Jacksonville Jaguars, but he is not the greatest draft steal in my book. But share your thoughts on us if you agree or disagree on that. You're certainly welcome to do that. Then, of course, again, the text line driven by Duval Ford, 641-1010. We'll get to that coming up. John Osier from Jaguars.com going to join us here in studio shortly. We'll get into, again, more from FSU's Pro Day, where the Jags stand 4 weeks out from the draft. Mike Kay from First Coast News in hour number two, making the rounds of the state of Florida with various Pro Days. We'll see if he's dried out after taking in Artie Burns and the Hurricanes workouts yesterday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you at 1010XL World Headquarters. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Johnny O's in the house, and you should be following 1010XL on Twitter. If you're not, are you in for a treat when you head on over to Twitter and sign up and follow 1010XL on Twitter, because there's going to be action photos of the crew. Chad Scott was just in here taking shots of my back, I believe it was, which is my better side, Tony, as we all know.
Those good old action radio shots.
Action radio shots.
There's nothing like them.
Look at their lips moving. They're talking again.
It's hard to capture all the energy in a room.
Really,
they are talking. Really. Johnny O's here. What's up, John? How are you?
Not much. I got to say, every time I come in 1010XL, and you guys may come in so much you don't really notice it, there's that sign outside in the parking lot, parking for prize winners.
Yes.
Sometimes I'll just park there if I want to feel like a winner.
Is that right? you're a winner in our book.
And I always feel a little better about myself when I park there.
How do you feel
about my description?
I feel like today we're sleeping on Tyler's couch. Like, I feel like, you know, we've been crashing at Fortunato's place, but he's having a girl over tonight. So he's like, hey, you're going to have to clear out. I don't care where you sleep. It just can't be here.
Like, between my my second, third year of college, I came home for break. I was going back to summer school. I stayed at my friend Barksdale's house for like 3 days. Went out to McFall's house for like 2 days.
Barksdale. Is that a first name, Barksdale?
No, David Barksdale. Okay. Attorney here. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of week it is, where you just kind of come in and, you know, Dave's mom says, yeah, let's just stay for a couple of days, and you're on the couch and your bag's sitting there.
Did you have a system in college? Like, did you have a roommate in college that you had to have a system with or anything like that? You know how it is. In a dorm room, you know, like Tony was saying, or Tyler was saying, throw the sock on the door kind of thing.
Look at me, Mike. It didn't come up that much.
No, but maybe. I was thinking maybe for your roommate. I don't know. Maybe your roommate was a
my roommate,
player.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, you're the kind of guy, right, that me and you.
I'd say we had a system.
The handsome guys would befriend us, had to get used that much.
Right?
Or the semi-handsome guys would befriend us, because then they'd be like, look, in comparison to that guy.
I had a system, and
like
I was always
nine.
Full of optimism when I was talking about it.
Is that
and
right?
I never got used
it
that
just kind of kind of wrapped up the wrong way by the end of the night. All right, John, you're back from Tallahassee, Florida State's Pro Day. We talked to you live from the event, and we got pretty much what we expected, I think, out of Jalen Ramsey. Not going to run and jump. Didn't need to. He's proven just the pure athleticism. But you know, after talking to us, was there anything else in talking with anybody who was on hand, taking in the workout, did he hold steady? I mean, it's hard to improve your stock, right, when you're that high.
Well, what's striking is you hear about a guy, and I had seen Jalen Ramsey play on TV, and I had seen, you know, clips when they're talking about him on ESPN or a show, but I hadn't seen him in person, obviously, because I don't go to Florida State games. Usually at a pro day, you go and you watch a guy run, and then you talk to scouts about him, and you drive away saying, "Yeah, pretty good." Well, with him, he's one of these guys that his athleticism and the way he moves, he just jumps out at you. And not everybody does at a pro day. I mean, they're going to be bad players. But I compared it on the air on Jaguars.com Live yesterday to when I saw Fred Taylor run the 40 at his pro day, which is still a legendary pro day workout. And the scouts kind of, even before they hit their watches, you could hear from across Florida field or out of Florida practice field, sort of a buzz. Kevin Carter the year before the same way, who was a big human being, 6'5", 2'6", you know, and ran where the scouts kind of went, whoa, this is something different.
And ended up going like third overall in the draft, too.
Yeah, I mean, for Kevin Carter. It's that sort of, and clearly Fred was that sort of player. So the guys that you go out and when you watch them practice, even in shorts, on the first 10 minutes, your eyes just kind of go over to them and you think, okay, even though I didn't know football, I'd know that was different. Well, for the 10 minutes that Jalen Ramsey ran around on Florida State's field, or however long it was, it didn't feel like very long, he more than lived up to what you thought he would be, and you could certainly tell the athleticism. So if it was just that, then who cares? But when it's that coupled with everything else, you think to yourself, well, the Jaguars don't really have that many guys that when you go to practice, your eyes are automatically drawn to him. Marquise Lee's one of those guys that when he's right in practice, I think everybody kind of watches him thinking, boy, this is something different. Julius Thomas has that sort of feel in minicamp last year. Jalen Ramsey is that sort of, whoa, this is something different.
Yeah, and they really don't have that on the defensive side of the ball. Even with everything they've done in free agency, they don't have a guy that you're watching going, whoa, and it feels like there's a couple guys in this draft that are that type of guy. Unfortunately for the Jags, I don't think any of them are pass rushers necessarily, which would really help them out. Maybe Dante Fowler's that type of guy, and we just didn't get to see him on the field last year. But it does feel like Jack and Ramsey
are. That's what you hear from people who talk about Dante, is that, you know, we saw him for, I took like four pictures for my Twitter account, and then he was down last year in practice. But even in those little moments, you could tell it was different. You could tell that it was easy to see why athletically it was an easy pick for a GM or a scout to have him that high. So we haven't seen enough of a sample size with our own eyes here in Jacksonville to say that, but Dante may be that guy too.
Yeah, and we talked about Florida State really not rich with draft prospects this year.
Right.
Outside of that, maybe the only guy really of major interest to the Jags. I know there is a bit of a groundswell out there for Roberto Aguayo. Irish Jag put a poll out there yesterday on Jaguar Twitter, and you know, I think it was 60-40 again. You know, I can't remember if it was 60-44 or against when I voted, but he said based on a fourth round pick, I don't think the Jags are investing any pick in a kicker. We kind of talked about this the other day.
I get the inclination. I was asked about it over the weekend, and I put some thought into it. If he had been bad on all three things he asked him to do, meaning extra points, field goals, and kickoffs, then obviously they'd be looking for a guy. But he was really good on kickoffs, and you know, with the exception of really the Colts game, he was pretty good on field goals for a rookie. I mean, and the extra points sort of blew it all up, perception-wise and reality-wise. I mean, you can't miss that many extra points and say to yourself, I had a good year as a kicker. But he certainly showed enough where I don't think they are actively looking for a kicker with that sort of equity invested into it. Will they bring in a guy? I'd be surprised if they don't bring in a guy for training camp. Will it be a guy where they do it, where they give up going after something else to do it? I don't think so.
No, I don't.
I think
they'd
have done that in free agency. If Caldwell had felt that sort of urgency about it, I think he would have done the same thing that he did with the punter, which is go after somebody in free agency so he knows he has somebody in camp. I don't think he wants to give up draft picks for that sort of thing this year. I think he wants to focus his draft picks on defense.
I think it still is a concern, though. And
oh, it's obviously
Jason
a concern.
Jason Myers needs to prove, because the extra points became a mental thing, I thought, and that's so that becomes a pressure issue.
Well, it had to be a mental thing because he was good on field goals.
Right, he was good on field goals, with the exception, as you said, of the Colts game.
Right, but then after that, on field goals,
but here's
he was
the
really
thing.
Okay.
But the Colts game, how many chances did he have to win games? How many chances did he have
one
at the
Baltimore
end of game? Okay, so one, right? Yeah. We're talking about one kick in the midst of the rest of the, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying those two kicks were
but I
both
think a case
high
could be,
pressure kicks in a season where you didn't have a lot of them.
Yeah, and again, you can't defend the extra points for Jason because it was all over the place all the time, and it felt like he was lining up at different spots trying to figure it out. After doing what he did against Indy and with the extra points, I would make the argument that mentally for him, every kick he kicked last year was a pressure kick because he knew all eyes were on him. So, I mean, you know, I think the mental thing went a lot more toward extra points than did field goals. It felt to me after a while with field goals with him, I didn't really think he was going to miss unduly field goals coming down the stretch. Extra points, I always watched.
Jags, now we're 4 weeks out from the first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah.
You think most of the work is done?
4 hours.
You think most of the work is done in terms of evaluation?
Yes, most. Now, there are still, you know, you've got 4 weeks, so one thing you want to avoid is paralysis by analysis. You don't want to go back in and start trying to reset things at this point. There will certainly be cases where there's discussions in a room and there's disagreement and there's time, so Dave will say, well, go back and look at them. Let's go back and take a look at them. For the most part now, it's less evaluation and more setting the board. It's more figuring out different if-then scenarios, meaning what teams will do. I don't know that Dave does this. I'm sure he does. They will let the board play out. They'll look at different mock drafts. They'll say, okay, if Tunsil's gone, then we think this team will do this, this team will do this, this team will do this, and then what do we do here if we've got this guy or this guy?
How much do you think when it's all said and done, do they just have, let's assume they're going to stay at five, okay? Do they have a list of five players, and whoever is the highest rated player left on that board, they take that guy, or how much of it is saying, okay, maybe the highest rated guy we have is a cornerback, but we really feel like we can get a cornerback in round two or round three that we like.
I think with Dave, it definitely plays into that.
Right, but does that already
he definitely
goes,
looks
that goes,
at what's...
That goes into the ranking, though, doesn't it? I mean, when a guy ends up...
It doesn't
up
go into the ranking, but it goes into the ranking where they'll take him, if you follow.
Whatever, when they make their board, call it the board, their board is the official ranking for all intents and purposes because it's what they're going to draft off of, right?
Right. So their action board, if you will.
They may say this guy is a 9.0 prospect, this guy's an 8.9, but we have the 8.9 higher because to us, the need is so much greater and the fall off at that position is so much greater that ultimately that guy slides.
Right.
So, but I guess my point being, how much do you think that factors in when they're stacking their board?
I think the chance
to take a guy who may not be as good a player as somebody else because of the positional scarcity.
It plays in some. I think it plays in a lot the deeper you go in the draft. Like, if you're in the second round and you know the draft is strong in defensive tackles for this year, for example, they don't need that. But if it was, I'm using this as an example, very deep defensive tackle draft. So if you're Dave and there's a defensive tackle and there's a linebacker that you both like, that you like equally, well, then this is a year where you would probably take the linebacker and assume that you could get help at defensive tackle because it's a very deep draft. In the top five, I don't know that I think it comes into play, but not as much because in the top five, you're talking about guys who probably transcend position, meaning they're so good that even if you normally wouldn't take a linebacker there, you take Miles Jack because he's Miles Jack, not because he's a linebacker, if that makes sense.
How early is too early for this team, if at all, to take a player that they think they won't get a significant contribution from this year? A guy like Jalen Smith, for instance, but it could be another player in that kind of camp where you say, you know what, maybe he was hurt late in the year. He's not going to make a major impact in 2016. What's the earliest you could see them spending a draft pick on that type of guy who's just – Too good a talent and too good a value at some point.
Doesn't it feel like you can't do it in the first two rounds?
It does to me.
Only because of this, because you've got, I forget how it plays out, but you've got a top 40 pick in the second round. You're not talking, if you're at the end of the second round, you could probably do it easier. When you're at the top of the second round, then maybe you get Tony Brackens again. You know, I mean, it goes a long way back, but he was the number two pick in the second round his year or close to that. With the way this team needs edge rusher, if you don't get that in the first round, you've got to think they try to get that in the second round and try to get something like that on the field.
I would think so, but then again, the argument that, you know, here's a guy that some people think would have been the top-rated player in this draft had he been healthy.
With Jalen Smith, and I get that that's the buzz and the language around people talking about it. To me, with Jalen Smith, it's more, it's going to come down to what your medical people say about him. Meaning, do you think he'll ever be Jalen Smith again?
Right.
If your medical people have looked at him and say, it's a redshirt year, but there is no reason physically that he can't get back to the point where he was, then you may take him in the second or third.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about, because why else would you even consider him?
Right, and that's going to be the X factor. So I think he will go probably in the second or third, because some team is going to say, yes, we believe that'll happen. Of course, the worry is Marcus Lattimore. If he's Marcus Lattimore, then there are medical teams, or there are teams with medical who absolutely will take him off their board, is my understanding. But if you don't take him off your board, then he's probably a second, third round guy, because then you're assuming that he will make it back. If he does make it back, he's an elite player.
All right, we got to take a break here. We will come back. We get some calls coming in. If you want to get on with John Osier, you're welcome to at 641-1010. Ron will lead us off coming out of the break. Right here, just got this one in on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. David Garrard, not too bad as a draft steal, as a fourth-round pick, 12-year career, started starting quarterback for several years, playoffs, and made a Pro Bowl. That was sent in by Ed Jay. Hey, folks, speaking of David, he'll be in with us tomorrow on Jaguars Today. And if you want to get in shape this summer, you got to check out David Garrard's Retro Rage, the new high-intensity training class at the Retro Fitness on San Pablo Road. They've got the tires, the kettlebells, the battle ropes, you name it, the trainers, plus all the other state-of-the-art equipment and amenities that only Retro Fitness offers. It's Retro Rage at Retro Fitness San Pablo, just in time for summer. So join today. You can get 10 classes for the price of 9. Visit RetroRageJax.com to get all the details there. David Garrard in studio with us here tomorrow on Jaguars Today. Your call's coming up next at 641-1010 with John Osher from Jaguars.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Alan Hearns, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Alan Hearns, will he turn out to be the best undrafted free agent signing by the Jaguars? Is he already? I mean, am I missing somebody obvious here? I mean, we've had guys that were not drafted by the Jags that were free agent signings in the early stages. But
yeah, I've
got
to think he's, I mean,
they were drafted by.
Again, I missed 10 years, so I don't know the nuances of every guy who played in that 10-year period. I wasn't here, but, I mean, he's caught what?
He's got 1,700 yards, I think, right? 1,700
yeah, I mean,
in 2 years.
Yeah, because Jimmy doesn't qualify because he wasn't.
He was a second-round pick of the Cowboys.
I mean, so, yeah, he's a 1,000-yard guy. I mean, how many 1,000-yard guys did they had? Four?
Not many,
so,
right?
I mean,
he's in that. For that position, he's certainly the best.
Right. And again, maybe there's somebody that we're
right,
missing.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I want to leave open the possibility that we're forgetting somebody obvious here.
This team has had a lot of guys contribute at that spot. But even special teams guys, where sometimes that'll come from. Scobie was a draft pick.
Yep.
Hollis doesn't count because he was brought in. I mean, he wasn't an undrafted free agent on that sort of thing, I don't think. So even special teams go out the window. No, I don't think so.
Right. All right. So we'll throw him at the top of the list right now, but does not fit.
Now, he's a high bar. He's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And we'll go through. We got a list here of the one person's list of the top 10 undrafted players in the NFL of all time. We'll kind of go through that. Some pretty strong names on that list. I disagree with the guy at the top of the list, but he probably deserves mention somewhere in the top 10. Just don't think he's the number one overall. We got Ron on the line, 641-1010. He's got a question for the Ozone. Ron, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, Hearns is great. He's an easy guy to pull for, too, isn't he? I can't believe he went undrafted. But anyway, I'm sure glad he did. I've not been looking. I hope he hadn't already talked about a couple of guys. But I love the draft stuff, too. The scenario I was hoping for, I think Jalen will be gone. If we could get Mac and then if somebody dropped down to the top of the second round, do you think, I guess I'll ask this, Bullard from Florida, does he fit our, if he was to fall down to the top of the second, would he fit as an edge, or are they looking for, and then Noah Spence, of course, and then if he doesn't get either one of those, the McKenzie Alexander, the cornerback from Clemson, and maybe going with that Nazib, the big defensive end from Penn State in the third round. I'm hearing he may go third round. So would any of those guys fit in our scheme of things? I appreciate enjoy the show.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. I think all those guys, John, are names we've heard bandied about, right? I mean, McKenzie Alexander.
It's so hard once you get to the second round.
Could go like 15th overall.
Right.
Or he could be there when the Jags pick. You've seen different projections like that.
And I know I've heard you talk about this too, Mike and Tony. It's so hard to get specific on guys once you get out of the first round, because you can say, would that make sense in the second round? Sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of things would make sense in the second or third round. If the board falls to you the right way, then a lot of things make sense. Those guys are certainly possibilities. If they take a guy at that position, it probably doesn't make sense. So it wouldn't shock me to see any of those guys playing here in Jacksonville. It is just too hard to speak intelligently and project. I mean, I'm not used to speaking intelligently anyway, but it's just too hard to project in the second or third round to really say, yes, I absolutely pound the table and believe that'll happen.
But I think if you talk about Mackenzie Alexander, certainly I think at some point they're going to draft a cornerback, right? So if
but
he's
I don't
there,
think I don't think in the top five. I mean,
No. But, I'm round, saying, sure, but yeah. That's what he's saying. With the second round pick, if Mackenzie Alexander or Eli Apple or any number of guys, Artie Burns, who right. we're going to talk about later with Mike Kay of First Coast News, any of those guys are sitting there, I think they're under consideration. I think that's where you begin to really look at that. Now,
right.
With the exception of Ramsey, because I do think if you draft him, that's where he's playing early in his career here in Jacksonville.
Corner, yeah.
He's playing corner. So,
well, yeah, he has to. And I heard Ryan talking about this yesterday, and he made perfect sense. You can afford to play Ramsey at corner because you only gave Prince a one-year deal.
Right.
Now, you firmly believe.
And you can ease him in because of that, too.
Right. And it takes the pressure off. And that's what every GM wants, obviously. They want to not have to play that first-round pick if he's not ready for a week, if he's not ready for two, if you want to play him in nickel, if you want to put, you know, that's the ideal. And it feels like they're getting closer toward that. I don't think he will play safety. He's got to play corner.
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100% right. on this team, for at least for the short term.
But the nice thing is you've got some depth. And if something were to happen to shut you, you have options, which they haven't had before.
Right. And, you know, you typically need that over the course of a season.
Always.
Right. So, you know, that's why I don't think Ramsey's off the board whatsoever. Carl Nassib is a guy that frequently gets mocked to the Jags in the third round, at least by, you know, fan mocks where you go to different sites where you can mock and the software fills in the rest of the picks. He's a guy who typically falls in that area.
You've been on those, haven't you?
I get a lot of don't you get a lot of people tweeting or sending in, hey, how does this look?
Yeah.
This is the one I was
it's
able to put
second round mock.
I get them every day, and that's fine. I appreciate the fact that they're into it and they're looking,
absolutely.
You know, like, let's try to piece this thing together. It's fun, man. It should be fun. It's entertainment. It's football, for goodness sakes, you know.
Doesn't it feel like it would be a huge surprise though if they don't get edge rusher in the first? It just feels like they have to do it in the second.
Yeah, I guess it depends on who's there, though. You know, doesn't it?
It's the one scenario where I could see them trying to trade back into the first round.
Usually
when people ask me that, I don't really believe that Dave intrinsically likes giving up that much to move around in the first and second round. I think he values picks. He knows the percentages are there. The only thing that makes me think that might not be the case is he was involved in the move for Julio Jones. So he clearly understands the risk, what it takes to give up, and the value if you believe a guy is the guy.
And the thing with Jonathan Bullard, I think the question, I don't know the answer to this, that you have to answer as a scouting staff is he explosive enough? Is he that guy, or is he one of these guys who is kind of a tweener,
right?
That you see as maybe a left end for first and second down who moves inside. They're collecting a bunch of those guys,
right.
And if they are going to take one of them,
he has to be an exceptional pass rush guy.
Because the one reason Buckner's name, I think, still gets mentioned to them, not frequently, but occasionally gets mentioned, is because he's been such an effective pass rusher in college. And people think that this guy's going to be good against the run and the pass when he gets to the pros.
And the other reason he gets mentioned is, again, when you're talking about the top of the draft, you want to make sure that when you have a top five pick, you give yourself the best chance at a long-term elite guy. And so if you get there and he's the one guy on the board who you in your soul believe, this is a long-term big-time player. I know he's not an edge rusher, but he's this good. Now, I don't know if Dave thinks he's that good or not, but if you get there and all the other guys that you think are long-term, define your franchise, signed a second contract guys are gone, and this guy is here, then there is the argument for this is roster-building stuff here. I don't want to pass on this. I don't think that'll happen with him, but that's the argument for a guy like that.
All right, before we cut you loose today, let's go through this list of this is from a CBS affiliate in Miami, put this out last year, on the top 10 undrafted free agents of all time. Jeff Saturday happens to come in number 10, a guy that you're very familiar with. Went on to be a very successful
Yeah, he's an odd one because he was undrafted for the Ravens and then went to the – it was sort of his second deal where he got good. So, yeah, but sure.
Yeah, he was – it says he was cut 6 weeks after signing with the Ravens in June of 98, returned to North Carolina to manage an electrical supply store for a while before getting it done.
Yeah, Howard Mudd saved Jeff's career, no question.
Wes Welker. Out of Texas Tech, obviously, he's gone on. Tony, you
kind
were looking
same
at
thing,
was
yeah.
around 9,000 career receiving
he's
yards,
like 9,900, something like that.
Yeah.
But he was drafted by or undrafted by San Diego, wound up in Miami, and then New England gave up the second round pick to go get him from Miami.
Right. And that's kind of the curious thing about Hearns is that a lot of these guys do kick around, and Hearns from day one, I mean, most of these guys were talking about don't get into camp, and from day one you go.
Hook on with that team.
Well, they missed on him.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So anyway.
By the way, five consecutive Pro Bowls at one point for Wes Welker. Priest Holmes came in at number eight on the list. Very successful career starting in Baltimore and then primarily with the Chiefs. Adam Vinatieri out of South Dakota State. I mean, if you're going to talk about a kicker sure. who's got Hall of Fame credentials, it would be Vinatieri. Rod Smith, who is the leader in receiving yards for undrafted players and was a big-time performer in the Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos. Antonio Gates, one of the most prolific pass-catching tight ends of all time. At number five, John Randall, excellent player, went to Texas A&M Kingsville and loved to paint that face. Inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010. Night Train Lane is amazing to me. I didn't realize with all the career interceptions that this guy has, a member of the 75th anniversary all-time NFL team, the 1950s all-decade team, went in the
it
Army.
May be the best nickname of all time.
Night Train.
That's unbelievable.
Phenomenal. Dick Night Train Lane didn't play until he was 27. Right. He went into the Army, undrafted out of college, dropped out, went joined the Army, served 4 years, got a job at an aircraft factory, and then one day decided, let me show up at Rams camp and see if I can petition for a job. And his rookie season, he intercepted 14. Unbelievable, man. And the NFL season was only 12 games long at that point in time. And here's where I had the issue. Warren Moon comes in at number two. Warren Moon's phenomenal, right? Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame quarterback. Kurt Warner's number one. Kurt Warner is more of a mythical figure than Warren Moon. Warren Moon's a better player than Kurt Warner to me.
Yeah, maybe if you choose between those two.
At the peak,
right.
I would say Kurt Warner's best peak year or two might have been the best. But
so the
Warren
list
Moon,
is undrafted players.
Undrafted players, guess, right. Okay. To me, Warren Moon had the better career than Kurt Warner did, despite the fact that he didn't have a Super Bowl ring.
Because Warren Moon's a little different. He was undrafted. He was not a mystery once he came into the league, of course, because he had been in Canada. So, but yeah, he fits on the list.
True.
I'm surprised Foster's not on the list.
Another good one. But, I guess you compare Arian Foster to Priest Holmes.
Sure.
Who do you take?
Sure.
You know, and, if you're doing
it
that
Drew
way.
I think Drew Pearson was a three-time All-Pro.
Is he going to come up on the pro again, Drew Pearson?
What's that?
You're gonna heckle me about Drew Pearson again with the Hail Mary?
He caught the Immaculate Reception, right,
yes.
Mike?
I believe that was it, yes.
That was
Drew Pearson undrafted, too?
He was undrafted, part of the 70s All-Decade team.
Not too bad.
Probably ought to be a Hall of Famer. So,
Allen Hurns,
as much as it kills me to
one
say
day
that.
In Canton, Ohio. Allen Hurns. There you go. Why not?
Maybe.
It's off to a good start. All right, Johnny O, what do you got cooking at Jaguars.com over the next few days?
Not sure yet.
All right. Man of mystery, John Osher.
No, it'll be not sure yet.
You want to try one more time?
No.
All right, good. John Osher.
I'm out.
At John Osher on Twitter. Read something that he writes at Jaguars.com, perhaps coming up in the next few days.
The ozone. I'll put the ozone up there.
But he's not sure. He's not sure. The ozone will be there. Yeah. It's there every day. All right, John. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys.
We'll see you. John Osher, Jaguars.com senior writer, coming back this date in football in the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Yes, indeed. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, replete with birthdays on this date, Tony. Not many actual things happened of note other than those famous players being born. 1950, you remember Ed Marinaro? You're probably too young to remember him on television. Tyler Devitt, Ed Marinaro, do anything for you?
Is that where marinara sauce comes from?
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact.
I do know
he
him,
used to sauce a bunch of Italian dishes, and before that, everyone just called it red sauce. So, Ed Marinaro was a 1971 Heisman runner-up from Cornell, And for me, Tony, I didn't
go Big Red.
I didn't watch him with the Big Red, but I did watch him on Hill Street Blues, where he played Officer Joe Coffey for about five seasons. He was also a head coach on the kind of the cult hit on, I think it was on Spike, Blue Mountain State, right? The football drama. So he had a lot of blue, I guess, in the title. But he turned 66 years old today. He was the runner up to Pat Sullivan of Auburn for the 1971 Heisman Trophy. Also born on this date. I should have had Tyler pull the clip. The most famous clip, my bad that I didn't give him the heads up. John Taylor, NFL wide receiver, of course, with the San Francisco 49ers, made a couple of Pro Bowls, and was most famous, John Taylor was, for catching the winning touchdown. I believe it was the 1989 Super Bowl when the San Francisco 49ers beat the Cincinnati Bengals for the second time in that decade. It wasn't Jerry Rice who caught the game winner. It was John Taylor, turns 54 years old today, and that was the one where infamously Joe Montana told his teammates, "Hey, is that John Candy over there in the stands?" So that was on the game-winning drive to kind of loosen the guys up and show that, hey, it's okay, guys. We don't need to panic. We've been here before. We'll march down the field and get this thing done. So John Taylor, NFL wide receiver, born in this state in 1962. Here's what it sounded like in the Super Bowl back in 1989.
Young, back to throw. In trouble, he's going to be sacked. No, gets away. He runs, gets away again, goes to the 40, gets away again, to the 35.
Actually, this is the wrong clip. This is Steve Young against the Vikings. It had John
Taylor. As soon as it said Young, I knew this was the wrong clip.
What's happening?
Where is this going? I don't know. And here's the thing. You can see it happening, Tony, here behind the scenes. As we're watching Tyler on the monitor, I was really stretching out the story of John Taylor. And I could see him scrambling.
I was working hard.
And he was working to get the cut. And I'm sure the clip you had was the Steve Young where he broke like six or seven tackles against the Vikings. And went like 50-something yards. That was one of the great runs in NFL history. So
the stumble where the ball's like in one hand, almost hitting the ground.
Glad we could bring you that highlight. Yeah. Doesn't really
that
have
did
a
not
lot
happen
to do.
In
he
the
did.
State.
He did play with John Taylor. John Taylor was on the 1994 49ers team as well. So John Taylor won three Super Bowls with the Niners, caught the game winner in only one, and that came from Joe Montana. Derek Brown, former Jaguar tight end, born on this date. His best season in 1996, caught 17 for .141. Did not score a touchdown. Sammy Coates turns 23. Could have a much bigger role this year with the Pittsburgh Steelers now that Martavis Bryant is suspended for the year. And famous deaths for this date. Newt Rockne passed away on this date. How old was Newt Rockne when he passed away, Tony? Would you guess? How long did he live?
63.
43.
Really?
Died young. Isn't he the one who said to go out and win one for the Gipper, right? He was the coach of Notre Dame when George Gipp was laid up in the hospital.
Yep.
Newt Rockne, football player and coach, died in a plane crash in this date in 1931 at the age of 43. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. They're a certified Invisalign provider. If you have a snore in the family, maybe it's you, the Somnomed custom fit mouth guard can solve your problems. You get a 10% discount on all first time customer initial visits, by the way, at Dr. McCall's offices. Call 620-9225 to make an appointment or visit jamesjmccall.com. for a complete list of comprehensive care services with a little bonus audio. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Cincinnati Bengals have reached an agreement with former Carolina and New England wide receiver Brandon LaFell. LaFell was released by the Patriots in March after seeing his role greatly reduced during the 2015 season. Speaking of the Pats, they have agreed to terms now with former Jacksonville Jaguars tight end Clay Harbor. New England traded for tight end Martellus Bennett from the Bears earlier this offseason, continuing to look for depth behind Rob Gronkowski. The 28-year-old Harbor caught 64 passes in three seasons with the Jags, including just 14 catches in 15 games last season. Chicago and offensive lineman Manny Ramirez have agreed to a one-year deal. Ramirez will be reuniting with his head coach John Fox, who was with him from 2011 to 2014 in Denver. Christian Hackenberg out of Penn State visited with the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. The Cowboys have been speculated by some to be looking at quarterback with that number 4 pick in the upcoming draft. The visit by Hackenberg could indicate that the Cowboys are indeed looking to draft a developmental quarterback, but you would think that would indicate the second round or later, at least with a guy like Hackenberg. Joey Bosa making the pre-draft visit rounds as well. Bosa met with the Titans a couple days ago, who hold the number 1 overall pick. He was expected to have a private visit with the Cleveland Browns, who hold the number two pick yesterday.
Are we at the point, I think I know the answer to this, are we at the point now there will be perhaps much relief or celebrating if Bosa comes off the board, arguably the best pass rusher in the draft, right, on a team that needs pass rush, on a team that went after Olivier Vernon and offered well outside the comfort zone, as Dave Caldwell said, Tony. Mm-hmm. Here we are a year later after Dave Caldwell said we drafted Dante Fowler in part because we don't know where we're going to be drafting next year, and we really only think there's one guy that's going to carry a first-round grade as a pass rusher. We always assumed that was Bosa, who was a consensus, you know, top 10 pick talked about when he eventually would come out. And are we at the point now that we've talked ourselves into convincing ourselves that Joey Bosa is not worth the fifth pick in the draft and that it will be a major relief to Jag fans if arguably the best edge rusher in the draft is not available with the fifth pick in the draft?
Well, especially if it goes lineman, quarterback, and Bosa at some point or three or four, then I think a lot of Jaguars fans are going, well, we got Ramsey or Jack.
Right.
It's done. It's done, and I think that's where everyone's kind of circling right now. It's not even – it's Ramsey and Jack, or Jack and Ramsey, and then, well, if they have to take Bosa, they have to take Bosa,
right.
Yeah, that's what it feels like right now, at least talking to the fans a month out from the draft.
But the idea, I think, is that – I think we still feel at least one quarterback probably goes somewhere in the mix. There was a talk that – it might have been Peter King's Monday morning quarterback follow-up. I'm not sure where I read it this morning, but that St. Louis, don't be surprised if they try to make a major move up the board. They're going to have to decide how much they like Paxton Lynch is the feeling, and that – maybe the value meets where they pick, which is around, I think, 14th in this year's draft, 14th or 15th. And will they love him enough to actually move up into the top 10? Could you see three top 10 quarterbacks? If you're talking about it like that, you presume that there's a very solid chance that two of them go in the top five. If that happens, you're loving life if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars and you're a Jaguar fan. But if none go, as long as one goes, though, we know they're going to get one of the ones that we've pegged as the top defensive trio in the draft. We'll find out, I guess, coming up 4 weeks from today, whether the Jags agree with that.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch hasn't even had his pro day yet. It's April 6th, so that could skyrocket his value. It could the Rams could not even have him there on the board.
April 6th, you know what April 6th is?
I don't.
It's my anniversary.
Oh, I should know that.
First time I kissed my wife. It's not our wedding anniversary. Our 26th year anniversary coming up this year. It's pretty good. Got off the hook. Got her some nice earrings last year for 25, and I'm off the hook. I don't know what I, what do you got to do for the follow-up for 26?
I don't know. What is 26?
Big kiss on the cheek. Thanks, honey. Appreciate you. Love you. Love you, hon. What else? Oh, yeah, somebody sent this on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. They said a couple of things were sent in, but somebody said, just saw NFL.com talking about this dude from Germany named Boehringer. At least I think that's it. Could be Boehringer. I'm going to go with Boehringer.
Boehringer, that's cooler. Boehringer is cooler. Yes.
Boehringer, okay.
Boehringer, everyone. There's all kinds of Boehringers.
He's a sleeper in the draft to watch. What do you know about this guy? Although he did play against non-NFL competition, he's a German kid, Moritz Boehringer. Okay, is what I'm going with, and he's 6'4", 225, runs a 4.39. And has a 37-inch vertical leap. They said, you know, think when you think of what kind of prospect he is, think Devin Funchess or Dorial Green-Beckham, and that a lot of teams are very interested in this guy. The great coincidence is we got Mike Kay coming up from First Coast News, and he's going to be at Ford Atlantic's Pro Day today. Well,
nice.
That's where Moritz Boehringer is going to be working out today. So we'll find out a little bit about this guy who apparently some teams are wishing the draft would already hurry up and get here because
4.39 40 at what size?
6'4",
wow.
225.
A big dude.
As a big boy running the 4.39 with a 37-inch vertical leap. So we'll find out. Mike is down there. There are a number of other FAU prospects working out, but Mike Kay of First Coast News was also at Miami's Monsoon yesterday, the underwater pro day. They are calling it the worst conditions ever that a pro day was ever held in. They wish they had Shad Khan owning the Canes because they would have an indoor practice facility long ago down there in South Florida. How they get by without one, I'm not sure. The team is called the Hurricanes. It seems to indicate inclement weather may roll through there every once in a while.
Yeah, from time to time.
From
considering
time to time.
They don't have that indoor facility going on down there. By the way, you're off the hook on the 26th anniversary based on my crack Google research.
There's nothing for the 26th?
Nothing listed for 26.
Kiss on the cheek?
The next one is 30th. Which they recommend either a pearl or diamond.
Pearl or Diamond? I thought 25th was Diamond.
No, 25th is Silver.
Oh, is it Silver?
Oh, it's a Silver anniversary.
You paid too much last year.
What's Diamond? Well, I guess it's 30th. You just told me that.
Diamond
gold,
shows
gold
up a
would
lot.
Be 50?
Gold is 50. Ruby at 40.
I got her some diamond earrings, but I think they had silver settings, so that probably worked.
Jade at 35.
Oh, yeah. Heather's waiting for that one.
Right.
Heather's really looking forward to that jade 55th amulet.
55th anniversary is the emerald anniversary, and then 60th is diamond again.
Well, you know what you can give her for your 26th now? You could
kiss on the cheek.
Or actually, it'd be your 27th.
Got it planned out.
When the Jaguars win Super Bowl 51, you can just give her a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and this
An official ring.
I love this.
Whose ring will I steal?
The 90th anniversary, according to the tradition in the United Kingdom, the traditional gift is granite.
Granite? I was going to say, like, Metamucil.
Anniversary is granite.
Who the hell's been married for 90 years?
I don't know.
Who's ever made it to the 90-year anniversary?
85th is wine.
Do you think anyone's ever made it to their 90th anniversary, whether it's in recorded or not? Somebody, right? Because people used to get married at, like, 13, right? But
you're still talking about living to
over 100.
Yeah, you'd have to both live to 103.
Right, and when people got married at 13, for the most part, that was a long time ago when life expectancy was a lot shorter, right? What do we got, Tyler? We got an update on the longest marriage of all time?
My quick sources are telling me here Karam Chan and Qatari Chan, living in the U.K., were married for 90 years. The longest marriage.
Are you serious?
The longest marriage in record.
At which point they begged each other to kill each other with a block of granite. Put me out of my freaking misery here. We've been married for 90 years.
They had their wedding on December 11th, 1925.
Congratulations to them. They're still going then.
Still going.
They're still alive.
That's awesome.
They just celebrated their 90th last year then.
Still, 90th going on 91.
We should send them something. You know?
Some granite.
Maybe they're Jaguars fans in the UK.
But they probably there's nothing that they have to worry about till they're 95th, right?
So they don't even list anything after 90.
Whatever the guy's name was, I can't remember it, is probably off the
hook. The Sean family.
He's probably off the hook. They're going to have to come up with something. I think, honestly, like a catheter or something. I don't know. What we have, but some kind of hospital bed. You know, something like that, right? At least one of those beds where you can, what's the bed where you can adjust
the
your sleep partners,
the
Tempur-Pedic?
Sleep number.
There you go. Sleep number bed. Something like
Dandy.
That, right? All right. There you have it. Very fascinating and very, very topical today on Jaguars Today. Mike Kay, First Coast News, will weigh in on Ford Atlantic's Pro Day today. We'll talk about Bo Ringer, Behringer, and we'll also primarily focus in on guys like Artie Burns and the rest of the Miami Hurricanes who are working out in really heavily rainy conditions yesterday in Coral Gables. We'll do that next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, Jaguars Today on this Thursday morning. Final day of March. April Fool's Day tomorrow. Don't try to trick me, Tony. Dave Regard's coming in tomorrow. No fooling. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Tyler Devitt along. Mike Kay, is he making his Jaguars Today debut right now? Is he the new Road Scout? Is he going to challenge the Road Scout for combine and workout and pro day supremacy? We'll find out. Mike Kay, First Coast News, is a busy man on Twitter. My man will post a video of something pertinent to the Jacksonville sports scene, and he's been doing that at all these pro days he's made the trip to. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning. How you doing down there?
Of course, man. I really appreciate it. It's actually quite different. It's not paralleling Miami from yesterday where it was like a monsoon. Right now it's really windy and sunny. So if I come back red, don't make fun of me.
All right. It's okay. We'll probably make fun of you anyway. It's just our nature. It has nothing to do with whether you're red or not. But tell us what's going on. Florida Atlantic is where you're at right now. There's some interesting local connections there. And we were just talking about this guy. Is it pronounced Bo Ringer or Behringer, this guy, the big German wide receiver?
It's Bo Ringer, as far as I understand it. But this dude's massive. I got a bunch of videos out on Twitter right now on him. But I clocked him at a 4.51 in his second 40-yard dash. And to be that size, and he looks all 225 of him. Like, this dude's big. He even blocked a little bit for tight end drill. So I think it's a matter of them trying to figure out what position he can play. But this kid can play. He made himself some money today. Really interesting prospect.
I was going off NFL.com who listed him as a 4.39 guy, so maybe somewhere along the line he ran that, you know, unofficially timed. But you're right. If you're right around a 4.5 flat at 6'4", 225, and, you know, you've got the explosive vertical that he's, you know, reported to have, you know, we'll find out. What kind of Jaguar scouting participation, who's on hand from the Jags that you can tell down there today?
Tim Mingy, who's been a scout with them since, I believe, 1994, at least the mid-90s, was actually running DB drills. Obviously, the big draw here is Crevon LeBlanc. He's kind of a nickel slot corner. Some people like him on the outside. He's kind of short for that. He's 5'9". I think he's like 186. But the dude, he had a great positional drill in front of, obviously, one of the premier Jaguar scouts. You know, he also had Sherrod Neeson, who actually put up some pretty decent numbers. I think he ran a 4.55 in his first run and then a 4.66 in his second. He's probably going to play anywhere in the defensive backfield. He's one of those versatile pieces that Dave Caldwell constantly talks about being interchangeable.
You know, the weather obviously today much better than it was yesterday at that Miami Pro Day. And you were out there for Miami in the middle of that monsoon. How difficult was it when you got the opportunity to talk to scouts, anybody else that was out there, to even try to evaluate what they were seeing from these guys given the conditions they were doing it in?
Well, you know, we always talk about going back to the tape. The tape is what matters. If you watch the way Artie Burns played, you couldn't see anything out there. The ball was slipping through hands, and he's a playmaker. I think he had 6 interceptions last year. It was very difficult to run. None of the guys really made excuses. One of the guys, Ufamba Kamalu, who the Jaguars actually talked to after the pro day along with Calvin Hodelu, said that, you know, we're from Miami, we play in Miami, we play in the rain, we train in the rain, we just had to adjust for the rain. And there was, like, really no excuses, which I found very impressive, and I know a lot of scouts thought that was impressive, too.
What's the buzz you hear about Artie Burns, Mike? I don't know, when you're in a position down there, like we talked with John Osher the other day, where he was and where Ryan O'Halloran was, they weren't near the scouts necessarily. Are you able to pick up what some of the chatter is about a guy like Artie Burns?
Well, luckily, due to the rain, like the likes of Mike Tannenbaum and a bunch of others were forced to go undercover. And after a while, I was able to go under there. I mean, you hear chatter, but it was like FSU. Like you said, with Ryan and John, we were stuck on the sideline, really not able to speak with them. At FAU, it was a similar setup. We had to watch from the stands, and the scouts were obviously on the side. But you can hear some audible, like, oh, wow, or woos, or, you know, like, Crevon LeBlanc ran a 3-cone today, and every single one of the scouts went, okay. So, I mean, there's that. If you're talking to agents, if you're talking to players, you can hear who they've spoken with. But really, that's it, and that's kind of where you're going. You're evaluating as yourself. You got to trust yourself as an evaluator and then take the time afterwards to speak to scouts.
And it certainly feels like the Jags are going to be interested at some point, probably in the first 3 rounds, in some kind of cornerback prospect. Artie Burns is a name that has been talked about a little bit there at the top of the 2nd round. You had the opportunity to see Jalen Ramsey a couple days ago in Tallahassee. Obviously, the kind of athlete he is compared to the kind of athlete that Artie Burns is, and obviously completely different weather conditions going in their workouts, Mike.
I didn't realize how big of a stigma the indoor practice facility thing was at Miami until I started posting some tweets. Man, those guys can be brutal. But, FSU was a great surrounding. They were able to obviously perform to their fullest because they didn't have to worry about a wet field. UM, it was a mess. I think Gil Brandt said that one scout said that it was the worst conditions for a pro day he'd ever seen. That said, though, Artie is a track guy. He looked fast. Obviously, both of them didn't run the 40 because their combine efforts were good enough for them. It was really interesting. And then also seeing Hargrave, who was indoors as well, who looked as smooth as I've ever seen a positional drill in my career covering football. So it was all 3 of those guys are really interesting.
Who else, if anyone, you know, maybe lower level at each of those pro days that you've been to, Mike, has caught your eye? You know, Florida State doesn't have a large list of NFL draft prospects this year, so maybe it's no one from there, but is there another guy beyond the top defensive back at each of these schools that you think may be on the Jaguars' radar somewhere later in the draft?
Well, I'll give you 3 names, one from each school. So for FSU, I'll give you Nile Lawrence Sample. I think he could be an interesting guy to compete with Michael Bennett in the later rounds. I thought he had a decent pro day. I think he could be used at 3 technique or the 1 technique. At UM, a guy that I had mentioned already, Ufamba Kamala, a lot of scouts like him as a five technique, but I also think he can play three technique. Okay pass rusher, but he's a monster of a man, very raw. I think there might be a little bit of a language barrier as well, but he's an impressive specimen. And then here at FAU, a guy that I like a lot is Trevon Coley, who's a defensive tackle who's also a three technique. This draft is very, very deep at defensive tackle and interior pass rushers. And while, you know, they signed Malik Jackson, you can never have too many pass rushers, not just on the edge, but on the inside. I'm a big believer in getting pressure from the inside creates a lot to the outside.
Mike, our first opportunity to talk to you leading into this draft thing. So what are the guys that you kind of like there at the top? It feels like the conversation has started to really circle around Jack and Ramsey and maybe a little bit about Bosa there at the pick at number five for the Jags. Is there a guy you like more than others there?
Well, to me, there's five blue-chip players in this draft. It would be Bosa, Tunsil, Ramsey, Jack, and Hargraves. And as much as people don't want to talk about Hargraves, if those other four guys aren't there, I mean, it makes a little bit of sense. You've got Prince Amukamara, who's coming off, you know, a bunch of injuries throughout his career, wasn't really a huge playmaker. You've got Davin House, who had four interceptions last year, but really a lot of those weren't plays on the ball. And obviously you've got Colvin, who it seems that they really like the idea of putting him in at nickel. I think you bring in a guy like Hargraves, and he's your starter and your best starter by year two. So he's an option, but as far as my board goes, I have Ramsey number one, and I have Jack 1A. And if Jack is available, you take him. Ramsey is available, you take him. If those two are there, you got to decide whether you're comfortable with your safety unit, because I just think Jack's a very special player, and you can use him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Tony and I like Jack better, and part of it may be the fact that they've signed a guy now in his mid-20s, and Tashawn Gibson, who is not just a space holder, right? He's supposed to be a really high-level player for them for the next three or four, maybe longer years, depending on if he earns another contract. Mike Kay of First Coast News here with us. By the way, on Twitter, at Mike_E_K, that's spelled K-A-Y-E. Mike, overall, what did you make of the job that the Jags did in free agency this offseason?
Contrary to popular belief, I think they did a great job. Malik Jackson was my number one player on my board in free agency, because I am a big fan of interior pass rush. You look at what Cinderic Marks did 2 years ago and how much that created for everybody else. The problem this year to me was the fact that you didn't have depth at pass rushing inside, too. It wasn't just the outside. So I like what they did with Malik Jackson. You needed to sign a playmaker. You got Sean Gibson. They needed offensive line depth. They got Mackenzie Bernadou, who was very sold on his role. I spoke to him last week. Very sold on his role. He wouldn't say what his role was, but clearly he's going to compete to be one of the starting guards or a center. And then you bring in Kelvin Beachum, who puts a fire under Jokel, and hopefully he delivers. Hopefully he heats up, and that's the best competition of the summer. So that's what I think you're looking at. And I also think, you know, the pass rusher, it is an issue, but this draft, if you're picking at five or you're picking early in the second round, you have a really decent shot at getting a decent edge.
Now, Mike, you say contrary to popular opinion. Do you think that is the popular opinion, is that the Jags failed in free agency because they didn't land Olivier Vernon?
I think locally, and nationally they're getting praised, but I think locally a lot of people are concerned that they don't have a pass rusher. And yes, that was their biggest issue. But as I asked Jackson at his presser, how important, you know, interior pressure is, and he said, well, that's what creates for other guys. I mean, I know I've been beating the Ryan Davis drum since I joined the beat about a year ago, but I think that he's more than meets the eye as far as an interior pass rusher. I also think he can play the edge. And then you've got a guy like Fowler, who they clearly believed in enough to, you know, use the number three pick in. I think if you get a premium talent like a Shalik Calhoun or, you know, a Leonard Floyd or somebody in the second round to kind of rotate with Fowler and also be his insurance, I think you're in good shape. I think they set themselves up where they can focus on linebacker and pass rush in this draft, and you've got to kind of take advantage of that. And I think I'm a Dave fan, so I think Dave did a really good job.
Alan Hearns out there at the Miami workout yesterday as well with some of the other alum. I know Ed Reed was out there hanging out. Usually when Miami gets together, you get to see some of these just classic names get together. Unfortunately, they're doing it from underneath an umbrella yesterday, Mikey.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, Reed looks jacked. He looks like he could play free safety for the Jaguars tomorrow. if you wanted to. I mean, Allen was the big man on campus. He went up to everybody. You know, a lot of these guys were transfers from junior colleges, and he didn't play with them necessarily, but he went out of his way to encourage everybody. When you talk to a guy like Dallas Crawford, who played multiple positions at the university, he said that Hearns was really a guy that kind of inspired him, you know, being an undrafted free agent and then going from that to being a guy who could probably start on at least half the teams in the league is really impressive. He was big on Rashawn Scott, who's their version of Allen Hearns this year, had a lot of injuries, had kind of a really rough bowl game, but did well at the East-West Shrine game and did well yesterday for sure at his pro day. There's another guy like Herb Waters who could be an interesting gadget guy in the mold of Denard Robinson. So, I mean, it was cool. The guys rose to the occasion in front of these veterans.
All right, Mike, as we get ready to cut you loose, for you, you've been to Miami, Florida State, Florida, now at Fort Atlantic today. I'm sure you've probably snuck a few others in. Is this about it for the pro day road trip, or do you have more in store?
I think I'm done unless I somehow make it up to JU. I heard JU has something going on Friday. And Andy, what's his name? Andy Hall, I believe his name is.
Andy Jones.
Oh, Andy Jones. Andy Jones, duh. When you write an article on a guy and you forget his name. He was really impressive at Florida's pro day. I might try to make it up there, or at least if he does some private workouts. But I think this is it. I'm exhausted. I need to sleep.
All right. Hey, you're exhausted because you've tweeted over 64,000 times. All right. I'm looking at it. My man is going to give you the lowdown with videos on wherever he is covering sports here for the First Coast. Mike_E_K, K-A-Y-E. From Mike Kay of First Coast News. Mike, we appreciate you weighing in, lending your thoughts from a firsthand perspective from these pro days, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again sometime before the draft.
Thanks.
All right, you got it, buddy. There he goes, Mike Kay, down at Fort Atlantic today. Keep an eye out for Boeringer, Tony.
Boeringer.
4.39. I don't know. I watched the video of him running a little comeback route. I don't doubt he runs as fast as the stopwatch says. Didn't look like the most fluid guy necessarily. Looked, lumbering may be a little too strong, but nevertheless, he mentioned Ed Reed too. We were talking, I was looking at today, we talked about the undrafted guys. My buddy Elliot Harrison at NFL.com did a story. Elliot's a really, really good football guy. Elliot Harrison, every offseason, goes back and picks a year from NFL history. And he has access from NFL.com and NFL Network, which he works on, to every game that's ever been broadcast. And he will watch every single game in order of an entire season. He'll watch week one's games, and he'll watch the film on every single game. And he'll do this in the offseason. He picks one season every year to really refamiliarize himself with the history of the league. He did a ranking of the top 10 defensive players of all time. And Ed Reed found his way onto that list in the top 10. So pretty interesting stuff. You can go check that out.
There's a guy, you think you're a football fan.
You think, seriously, this guy, Elliot Harrison, is a...
He's watching football from 25 years ago for an entire season just because he wants to know.
Right. He looks like a pretty boy, by the way, and we tell him to his face because he is a freaking pretty boy, and it makes us sick that he's a pretty boy who actually knows what he's talking about. That doesn't sit well with me, but he does a hell of a job for NFL Network and NFL.com, and I really respect his opinion, and he does. Goes back there and just takes it all in. Hey, coming up, we've got the fan feedback spotlight today asking you, courtesy of the Tom Bush family of dealerships, who is the biggest draft day steal for the Jaguars? Which draft pick that they took most vastly outperformed their draft position is basically what it boils down to. We'll check in on both Facebook and Twitter as we continue along today with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today. All right, final 10 minutes or so at Jaguars today on this Thursday morning. David Garrard in studio tomorrow. More on the Jags offseason as we continue to get towards the NFL draft, move towards the NFL draft. 4 weeks away from today, we'll have round one underway in Chicago for the second year in a row, and we'll see what that brings for the Jacksonville Jaguars over the course of that three-day period. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. As we look at the fan feedback spotlight today, just got one in, Tony, on the text line. Probably the guy that when I think of draft steals for the Jacksonville Jaguars, today's question brought to you by the Tom Butch Family Dealerships, I think Rob Meyer. I think seventh-round pick who was a vital part of this football team, and you can look, there are plenty of good suggestions that have been sent in today, a lot of Maurice Jones-Drew, Brad Meester, Fred Taylor, Rob Johnson for obvious reasons, things like that. A lot of good candidates out there. I'm hard-pressed to find a guy who's made as significant an impact after, say, the third round for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think you go to Vince Manuai as one of the best third-round picks this team has ever made. You know, certainly many good second-round picks. And you start to get into, in the first round, you know, you're supposed to be a pretty impactful player. I don't know if you expect a 10,000-yard career rusher ever when you draft a running back. So you can argue that Fred Taylor, when you combine the fact that they really got him off of a fourth-round selection of Rob Johnson, you can look at it that way. But that's what we asked you today. Who's the biggest draft day steal in Jaguar history? And for us, that doesn't include Allen Hurns because they got him as an undrafted player. He was a steal of a signing, but not what we're looking for today. But what's some of the feedback that we did get today?
Here's what we got on Twitter from Brian. Bobby McCray probably, then Allen Hurns. Of course, Allen doesn't qualify.
See, McCray is another seventh rounder, had the 1 year with the 10 sacks,
yep.
Right? But I would put Rob Myers overall years of contributions ahead of that one season that he had.
From Eric, just how it came about with the trade of Rob Johnson, Freddie T, the biggest regardless of the pick number. From Ocho Fisho, Rob Johnson, because his performance led Buffalo to trading for him so we could get Fred Taylor. From Joey, Mojo was the steal. I couldn't believe he didn't go in the first round. From Chef Jags, Mojo, Hurns, if you include undrafted free agency, and maybe in a couple of years, Telvin Smith. From Irish Jaguar, he went and included a graphic that included the running backs that were drafted ahead of Maurice Jones-Drew in that 2006 draft. Number 2 overall, Reggie Bush. Number 21 overall, Lawrence Maroney. Number 27, D'Angelo Williams. Number 30, Joseph Addai. And number 45, Lindale White, with Maurice Jones-Drew being the sixth running back
selected.
Good. That's pretty darn good. From Jarrell, Mojo, honorable mention to Daryl Smith. From Duval Doom, it was Fred because we couldn't have had the pick without Rob. What did he do after he left again? From Black Dog, your pick 60th overall and holds your position for 14 years. I'd call that a steal. Brad Meester deserves a mention. From JP, remembers when the Texans picked Clowney, maybe as the best value pick for the Jags. From Nick, Rob Johnson, since he got you Fred Taylor.
Yeah, I know a lot of people go in that route. You know, you could certainly argue that you flipped Rob Johnson into not only a first, they got a first and a fourth. They got Tavian Banks in that deal, too. Had he not gotten hurt, who knows, that really would have looked even that much better. Looks pretty good as it is.
No, he does. And Pro Football Reference does this kind of cool thing where they do a career weighted average, basically, for a player. So it's a total career weighted average. So you get 100% of your career value for your best season, 95% for your second best, 90% for your third best, so on and so forth, right? And you can go through and look at the drafted players by the Jags and organize them by that rank, by that measure. And number one all time is Fred Taylor with a career AV of 88. Number two is Maurice Jones-Drew with 72. Brad Meester. Number three, Daryl Smith. Four, Rasheen Mathis, who didn't even get mentioned. Number five on that list. The first pick that shows up that's after the second round for the Jags is David Garrard, which comes in around 10th all-time in that stat. Some of the other late-round draft picks that you're talking about, third, fourth round, and later, Vince Manuai on that list, Aiken Adell, Seth Payne, Aaron Beasley was a third-round pick, John Wade, Danny Clark among those, Marlon McCree, who played here for a while here in Jacksonville. As you go down that list, Rob Meyer on that list as well.
Yeah, I would put Rob Meyer ahead of a lot of those guys that were just mentioned in terms of overall impact. You don't compile a lot of statistics as the third defensive tackle in a rotation with guys like Henderson and Stroud, but those guys raved about Rob Meyer as a teammate and what he brought to the football team. Here's some of the Facebook responses we got. Greatest steal was MJD in round two when he could have been a top five pick. 32 teams passed on him. He made most of them. Hey, Marshall went with that as well. It's your bestie, MJD. Pro Bowler, led the league in yards, came in humble with a chip on his shoulder, left as a legend in our hearts. Hashtag Jags pride. Josh went with trade to Buffalo of Rob Johnson plus getting rid of a mediocre quarterback for Fred Taylor. Several people said when all is said and done, including Sean Cummings, said when all is said and done, Telvin Smith will turn out to be the biggest draft day steal. May, in fact, turn out to be. Wouldn't be right now, but maybe trending in that direction. Seth went with Scobie. but not because they got him in the fifth, because they stole a sixth-round pick from the Steelers for him. Wow. Allen Hurns, and he wasn't even a pick. Major steal, says Eric. If it plays out like it should, said Mike Musgrave, Brandon Linder would be the most valuable guy. Kevin did vote for Rasheen Mathis, so we at least got one acknowledgement of Rasheen, who's the best defensive back to ever play for this football team at this point in time. Apologies to Donovan Darius and anybody else who may be in the conversation. I think Rasheen tops the list. And I told you I ran into him not too long ago out at the golf course out at St. John's Golf and Country Club, and I got to just follow up. And Rasheen said he'd love to come in and spend an hour or so talking to Jaguar fans, kind of looking back on his career, his times here. It would be awesome, man. I mean, you think back to that 2007 season, how great it was, that little playoff run, which is the last time you've had a taste of that. And Rasheen was so in the middle of that whole season, particularly when they played Pittsburgh. That season was all about, in part, beating the Steelers, right? They beat them in the playoff game. They beat them in the regular season. Only team to do that to the Steelers twice in Pittsburgh in 1 year. And Rasheen was all up in Ben Roethlisberger and company's business back then. So that's something to look forward to, certainly, with Rasheen Mathis, just one of the latest, hopefully, former Jaguars to join us on Jaguars Today. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by from Jaguars.com. Check out, he has no idea what's coming up on Jaguars.com, by the way, but check it out nonetheless, other than the Ozone, which is the daily
occurrence. We asked three times.
And he kept going. He'd go, you know what? Yeah, I don't know. He has no idea, so he's drawing a blank.
Ozone. We know the Ozone will be up.
You know, it's funny. When we talk for five minutes about something that is not pertinent to the Jags or the NFL, and we always get, slow news day, right? We always get that from several people. Yeah, well, guess what? It's March 31st. It's not exactly the peak of news days for the National Football League, say that, but somehow we managed to scrape together 2 hours of mostly NFL conversation. Thanks to Mike Kay from First Coast News, weighing in for Florida Atlantic's Pro Day. He's been to all the big ones here in the state of Florida, so checking in on that regard as well. Hacker, T-Wiggs, Joe C. in the house. Tyler, do we know? He gives me the palms up. He has no idea. Are you producing XL Primetime today?
I'm producing, and I probably should know what show hosts are going to be here.
I'm just throwing that out there. I was going to leave that unsaid, but you filled in the blanks quite nicely. So we'll find out who is here next from XL Primetime when we do that coming up momentarily. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. David Garrard in studio with us tomorrow, talking Jags off season. There you have it. It's Jaguars Today, XL Primetime next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.